The worst came true this past week for those who had been demanding a GOP replacement for Obamacare. That bill is now making its way through the legislative process as the compare and contrast with Obamacare continues. Here to give his analysis of what the new plan holds and whether the debate is bringing up any relevant serious points is the healthcare policy research fellow with the Heartland Institute and managing editor of Healthcare News, Michael Hamilton. Thanks for being here today, Michael.
Oh, thank you so much for the invitation. I'm happy to join you today.
And for the Heartland Institute, it's heartland.org. So on the surface, before we get into some details here, on a rating of A through F, when you look at the GOP Obamacare replacement, overall grade for it, what would you give?
I saw somebody speaking and tried to do this after Speaker Ryan spoke the other day and gave it somewhere like a D plus or so. If Obamacare is an F, then this would be a D plus. But that person was arguing that this is the best we have. I personally think it's early enough in the process that if we're looking at a D plus or even a C plus on this, then we really ought to be aiming a lot higher. I used to be a teacher. I was in the classroom and now I'm educating in a different way, promoting free market reforms at the state level and the federal level for healthcare policy. And I think that we can be aiming a lot higher here. If we have to end up with something like the American Healthcare Act as it's been proposed, then I think that's a different conversation. But right now, I think that it's still early enough in this process. You have enough opposition from conservatives who want to see what they would describe as real reform happening and a full repeal and replacement of Obamacare, really moving the system back more with patients at the center of it, that it's too early to just assume that this is the best that Republicans can come up with.
Well, certainly you have to think, too, the federal legislative regulation quagmire that Obamacare created with those multiple thousands of pages. You couldn't simply jump the Grand Canyon with a running start.
Well, surely that is correct. The Affordable Care Act is a terrible law. It has helped a few million people here and there, but the numbers that the left has trotted out as to what this law has actually accomplished are inaccurate. You know, they're usually claiming anywhere between 20 to 22, and then some even say 24 million people were served by this law. And the fact is, the number is really closer to 16.5 million, and 81% of those were actually just put onto the public rolls with Medicaid expansion. And so that's a high price to pay for 81% of all people helped by Obamacare just joining Medicaid. That was not what the Affordable Care Act proponents had promised. It's not what President Obama promised. And so it's a terrible law. It would be hard to make a law worse than that. And the Affordable Care Act does some things that would really improve upon it. I think right now the question is Speaker Ryan, if what he's saying about this being only phase one of a three-phase process, if we get through phase one, are we really going to see Republicans follow up and execute phase two and phase three to execute real reform? I think that's the question. Republicans have a long history of swerving before Democrats do in a game of chicken, not just in healthcare policy, but when we're talking about things like the debt ceiling and the deficit and budget bills. Republicans historically swerve even when they have the majority in one or both chambers. And so I think that's where a lot of the skepticism comes in, is to thinking that once you get through phase one, that the rest of this repeal and replacement that Speaker Ryan is promising is actually going to happen. If we had a better track record of following through on the things that we said, then I think that you would not see quite as much opposition now from conservative Republicans.
Everyone's waiting for, apparently by this Tuesday, the CBO is going to score the Obamacare replacement. And as far as cost to the government, as far as cost of policies, are they properly addressing the costs of doing business in the medical industry? Because as we've seen in state by state, insurance companies are just left the game because it was too costly to do the coverage under the structure of Obamacare. Is it being properly addressed in either stage one, or is it planned down the line to make it more inviting for other insurance companies to return and keep the few that are still in the game in the game?
Sure. Well, I think that they're having a good go at it, but one thing that we are going to continue to see is adverse selection as long as we have a system in which people with pre-existing conditions can essentially go buy insurance anytime they want to, while insurance companies are required by the government to insure those people no matter how expensive they may be to insure. That combination is what is driving insurance prices up so high. Now you could change one of those things. You could make it so that people can buy insurance virtually any time, but allow insurers to charge them more if they have a pre-existing condition, or you could make it so that they just simply can't buy year round, but you're still restricting what insurance companies are able to offer. That's a difficult circle to square, and I personally think that the real solution is to de-emphasize the importance of insurance. And don't go into this thing even assuming that the goal is to make it possible for every person to have insurance and even require them to have insurance, which the Republican plan, it wouldn't truly require it, but it would. I think it still would include some coercion because it replaces the individual mandate and tax penalty with a premium penalty, actually requiring insurers to charge people more if they come to buy insurance and they didn't have insurance before, and dictates their prices. What I would like to see is actually the federal government, Republicans and Democrats, distinguish between health insurance and health care, because Chris, there are all kinds of ways for people healthy people, sick people, middle class, low income, to obtain health care, which is really the objective, that have nothing to do with insurance or that involve insurance just in a marginal way. But what we're seeing is a Republican reform that made the same mistake in some respects that Democrats made with the Affordable Care Act, and that's confusing health insurance with health care. And as a result, I think you're going to see insurance companies still continue to raise prices as much as they can because when you say that, well, we're going to be giving out this much in federal taxpayer dollars to subsidize insurance, and we're going to try to make that subsidy as high as we can, that becomes the floor for insurance companies. If insurance companies know that everybody's going to get $5,000 in free money, suddenly their plans are going to cost at least $5,000. And so de-emphasizing the role of insurance and health care, I think would help generate competition, and it would actually make insurers actually have to guarantee that the products they're offering are ones that can compete with other modes of paying for and acquiring health care.
Michael Hamilton, who is the Healthcare Policy Research Fellow with the Heartland Institute, managing editor of Healthcare News. Heartland.org is the website, and you are listening to Issues and Ideas. On that note of subsidies versus the tax credits, which the replacement is proposing, seen several studies where, by and large, with the exception of states where there are the fewest exchanges, by the way, Arizona, Oklahoma, North Carolina, I think Tennessee was another one, possibly Nebraska, average person, and when I say average, I mean 40-something and $40,000 to $50,000 income, is actually going to make out better with the tax credits than they are with the subsidies.
Yes, well, and so I think that is an innovation of the plan that is potentially good. I think it's politically advantageous because, you know, here you have the other side of this, the Obamacare proponent side. They are banking on their ability to pick out the people who are poor or who are lower middle income and just basically tell their sob story and blast it out everywhere. And the fact is that there are elements of this Republican plan that would really do a lot more for those people. And it's partially based on income level that they're making. It's primarily based on the age that they are, which I think that's a smart way to go about it, is to look at people's ages, because that's a bigger determinant of how much healthcare services you are buying in a year than the income level that you make. Just because you may not make a lot of money doesn't mean that you're sick necessarily. And so I think that's an innovation of the plan, and that's politically it's a very smart move for Republicans because they are indeed able to point to people who are benefiting right now under Obamacare and saying that they're going to give them help as well.
About a minute and change before I have to wrap up here. Regarding Medicaid, the plan is the replacement plan calls for a gradual rollback of Medicaid between now and 2020. How much does that impact the states who accepted the Medicaid expansion, either negatively or positively?
Sure. Well, this is a bit of a mixed bag, because what you have is that the Republicans would cap Medicaid expenditures by imposing a cap on a per person cap. And so that's a good thing, because right now when states spend Medicaid dollars, and this is true of expansion states and non-expansion states, then it's virtually an unlimited match, to where the federal government pays a match rate percentage for every dollar that the state pays as part of its Medicaid program. And so in that sense, there is an incentive for states then to spend as much as they can, even though it's costing the states, the federal government's matching their dollars to some extent. And so that would actually get capped to where there would no longer be an unlimited matching from the federal government. Unfortunately, it also gives, the current plan would give states an incentive to expand their Medicaid programs in order to qualify for some of that matching dollars, in order to increase the roles of the number of people they have on Medicaid, so that when those caps go into place, then they have more money to spend on those people.
And we'll follow as long as the legislative process goes through. It's in the House right now. We'll go through the Senate, and if there's no agreement, they do a butting of heads, I guess we'd call it, and we'll see what comes out. But as many people are hoping and most are believing, there's nowhere to go but up as far as any federal program of health care that is possible, at least in the stage one, and as Speaker Ryan did promise this past week. This is just the first step in what will hopefully be many if those in charge in Washington live up to their words. If you want to learn more about the Heartland Institute, heartland.org. He is their healthcare policy research fellow, also managing editor of Healthcare News, Michael Hamilton. Michael, thanks so much for being here today.
Chris, thank you so much. It was an honor to be with you and your listeners today.